This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a three-time champion, check out my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in a half hour, I can promise you today. 100% certainty, Jack Caglione is joining us at 10:30.
We apologize for the one day delay.
Yeah, things got moved around a little bit, right? Everything's moving there in Surprise, Arizona quickly for spring training. But I can guarantee you, Jack Caglione, 10:30 today, we'll have him join us on the show.
You're going to give Alex promises $1 to every listener of this show who asks for it. Hear from Jack Caglione at 10:30.
That's correct. We would have to have massive technical failure for that to not occur.
Okay, good. Plus at 12:15, Brett Veach, the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs. So busy day on the show. And at 11 o'clock, we're here from Andy Reid. We got a lot going on today.
Combine is underway in Indianapolis and all that. And it's like, yeah, just, you know, today, honestly, in hearing from Andy Reid and Brett Veach is far more interesting than anything happens the rest of the week, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I will not be sitting there on Thursday, like, glued into the offensive lineman running 40-yard dashes. I'm good. You guys can let me know how that goes.
I care about bench press for them, don't I? I don't care how fast my offensive lineman is.
I actually don't care about any of the metrics. I'll let Brett Veach and company handle that. You guys tell me how that impacts things. I'm more interested in what today and this week is, which is the free agent impact, right? And we're going to get to that here in a second, in about 10 minutes or so. What are they going to do with Trey Smith? What are they going to do with some of the other pieces? Travis Kelce's feature. Those are some things we're going to get into throughout the day, and of course with Brett Veach later on. That kind of stuff is actually far more interesting, and I think important almost this week. You know, because think about it. I know they all want to be in person. It's mainly so they can talk to agents. The actual drills and everything, Cody, you can look online and find out the 40-yard. Do I have to watch a 40-yard dash, or can I just see the time to know the dude was fast?
You can just see a time. I mean, you can just wait for people to give you that information. And historically, it really only matters this weekend for about 10 people on the good and 10 people on the bad. There's 10 people who you will care about, right? Like maybe somebody moves up their stock from fifth round to fourth round.
Sure.
But, you know, but the 10 people are like the guy who was looking at like 40 and all of a sudden he runs Xavier Worthy's 40 time. And you're like, he's probably going higher than we thought before. And for the 10 people, you're like, my God, you were so much slower than we were anticipating, or weaker, or, you know, whatever. And those guys will see a shift of 10 to 12 moves, spots, depending on where you are. Outside of that, no. It's what my team is planning on doing in the draft, which I'll find out a week and a half from now or whatever else comes in there. So, yeah, it's dependent on that.
You guys can interact with us on the Jays Southland Tow Service text line 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running as well. Cody's rocking one of the giveaway items, yeah, I think, from this past Royals season.
You know, I didn't get a chance to wear it last summer. It was too hot.
Windbreaker.
Yeah. And then this felt like windbreaker weather, you know?
Oh, it's great.
68 degrees, 65 degrees. It's like you want a light jacket, but you don't want to get too hot. So, yeah, I went with the
I like it.
I believe it's the 90s windbreaker.
Yeah, you know? That was definitely a giveaway in, what, like, June or July, maybe, something
like
that.
Yeah, I think this year.
And those are always fun as well. Other stuff will end up in our Cody Engel garage sale, basically. Yeah, whatever we don't use from giveaways and stuff like that. But let's talk about the Royals, because
this one could still end up there. I don't know. Depends on if I like it.
Show worn.
I can prove it.
Right now. Take a photo real quick. Screenshot that thing. No, let's look at the Royals, though, because at this point, I think it's pretty certain, you know, even when we had JJ on a week or so ago, what the roster is kind of what the roster is. Like, maybe there's, you know, they brought in a Stripling to a minor league contract, but pretty much like the roster is what it is in terms of moves that could impact anything to start the season. Could they make a move in the season? Of course. And so when you think about what they accomplished, we knew going into this past offseason there was less to do than a year ago, where they completely flipped that opening day roster. Thank goodness they did. And
the entire starting rotation was different.
So how would you judge this? And I'm judging them offseason wise also based off of their peers in their own division, right? An AL Central that had three playoff teams, an AL Central that it sure looks like, and if you believe some of the projections out there, whether we're talking betting lines, whether we're talking the Pocota, whatever, right? This is a really, really close division again, it sure seems like. And so when I look at what the Royals did compared to other teams, well, thank goodness the Tigers did not get Alex Bregman, because otherwise I would say, well, the Tigers had the best offseason.
That would have scared me.
But they didn't, right? No. They didn't. The Minnesota Twins?
About the same.
Yeah. The White Sox, we don't really count. The Guardians, you know, they're going to get some guys healthier maybe to start the season. That was the big blow that they had to begin their campaign a year ago. But I think the Royals, other than, hey, did they address outfield? That is the one big thing. Other than that, I love that they brought back Michael Wacha. I obviously like the fact that I think they found a true leadoff hitter in Jonathan India. The one question that I had about the offseason, not whether or not pitching can hold up, that's separate. I'm talking about the offseason would just be, are they going to regret not addressing left field or center field?
They might, but I will say center field in particular is an interesting one, but I would also just tell you, market's never really good there. Finding a reliable center fielder is not an easy thing to obtain in Major League Baseball. And Kyle Isbell, for the, like, screw it, let's have one defensive side of the ball where the guy is a left-handed bat, produces okay. Isbell does the job for that, and I'm not here to really complain. Right field, maybe. I'd listen to right field and say, you are going to try a lot of different stuff here, and you're going to see if any of it sticks. And if it doesn't, how quickly are you willing to move on? The one argument I would make for them, because knowing what we know now, I would say that they are still a better team than they were last year. The rotation on paper is better. It's deeper than it was before. They didn't just give up. They had some of the moves they made last year, like Kyle Wright, which were long-term plays. I think Bubich, now that he's fully healthy, certainly increases it.
And that's the key, the innings for him, because there's no Brady Singer anymore.
Yeah, and they didn't let Lugo and Wacha and Reagan, like all those guys, the guys that anchored the entire thing, are back and in business. I understand they've lost Brady Singer, but because of the additional things, I think they're better there. And they are infinitely better in the bullpen. The one argument I'll make for right field is they tried to sign right field last year with a multi-year deal for Hunter Renfroe. Is it crazy to try one more year of Hunter Renfroe to see if that could still be a solution in right field? Truthfully, no. They gave him a multi-year contract for a reason. They thought they'd get multiple years out of production out of him for a reason. If it fails, that's the deadline. You know, your whole deadline is going to be based on the idea of, can you improve the outfield?
Right. The Kyle Isbell center field thing, defensively, I think we've seen what they're actually getting. Yeah. Really good defense out of him. And I mean, it was Jake Eisenberg on the broadcast when we carried the first spring training game last Friday. And he said, this is about to be the fifth opening day for Kyle Isbell. One of it. Remember, initially he had it because of an injury. Isn't that nuts?
What?
Yeah, I believe I heard him correctly, that this is going to be the fifth opening day for Kyle Isbell. And if you remember, his first or second time was there was an injury right before the season. And so it was kind of forced to happen. But since then, to his credit, this is about to be his fifth opening day. And that is crazy to think about. He's been part of this organization a lot longer than we think.
That sounds wrong. Like,
I'm pretty sure I heard Jake Eisenberg correctly.
He can
text me and tell maybe I'm misquoting him. I'm 90% sure. He's like, yeah, this is about to be Kyle Isbell's fifth opening day. And I was like, what?
Like spring opening day or like opening day?
No,
opening
I think he meant opening day. So I took it as opening day, opening day.
Like as I start going through the stats, yeah. He was on the Royals for only 28 games. It was a short-lived 2021. But 2022, 2023, and 2024, he's been a member of the Royals. He's played around 100 games each of those three seasons, 136 last year, where I'll point out, Kyle Isbell has been a positive WAR player. Like, I get it. He doesn't get on base. He's not hit for average. But he plays. He can play center at Kauffman, which I think is not an undervalued trend. Like, congratulations, you can play center at Kauffman. A lot of people in the league can't do that. And he found a way to be a productive member of this team last year. Kyle Isbell's the kind of player where I think every year you kind of hope maybe you find an upgrade through your system and somebody who challenges him. But if he's your starting center fielder, you're not a playoff team because Kyle Isbell's on there. I think it's more about the corners. And I think some of this was like me going through the conversation and realizing with some people, which is how few power-hitting right fielders the Royals have had. Like, I'm interested to know what Jack Caglione, you know, right field for the same reasons. But, like, they have just been running out regular-ass dudes in right field forever. I think they were trying to remedy that a little bit with Hunter Renfroe. But it's been more players like Nori Aoki or Paolo Orlando than, like, the guys who play right field in baseball that you know. Bryce Harper, Judge, like the guy, you know, the guys who play that position hit for a ton of power because the corners are where they tend to get power in Major League Baseball, and the Royals haven't really explored that. That's the one glaring weakness. But just as long as Jonathan India is a qualified Major League level leadoff hitter, and his on-base percentage would have been best or second best in the Royals last year and would have been top 25 in baseball, just as long as he's that, they'll be okay offensively. Him, Bobby Wood Jr., Salvador Perez, Vinny Pasquantino, like, that offense can hit a little. Like, so I still think they have to win via pitching. Like, I still think that that's their path to winning.
It is.
And that's why they spend all their money in the bullpen.
It is. And the bullpen is the part that I think, you know, should be such a welcome sign for Royals fans at the beginning of the season, you know, because we know that was a huge talking point throughout. And until they acquired Urshag, it was a massive, massive problem for them. And then and when it mattered in September, they actually had really good performance out of the bullpen. But the Estevez signing kind of came out of nowhere for a lot of people once they realized they couldn't go and get the outfield help. So they said, let's allocate that money to the bullpen even more. And then I really want to see what Hunter Harvey is, because you know that at the time, we thought that was going to be the big acquisition. Mm-hmm. And then he clearly wasn't healthy and right. I think he was overworked by the Nationals organization personally.
I think so, too.
And so now,
which is something maybe you should have seen, in fairness.
Sure,
but,
sure.
You know.
Now, the trade in how it's viewed is all going to be dependent on this year. Like last year, they didn't get anything out of him. They really got nothing. So what is he this year? Let's not forget how we felt about him at the time of the acquisition. He could end up being a huge piece in how Q can manage the back end of the bullpen. Because we know it will not just be one guy again.
RV Ursa,
that's not how these teams approach it anymore.
I mean, that's pretty... I mean, they have a chance to have any, like a... I think Vern said top five, but I don't think that's out of the question.
Top five in the AL. Yeah.
Top three or five bullpen, top 10 in baseball. Like, that's not... That's not out of the question, especially because I think for the first time, probably since that draft, they have decided who is bullpen and who isn't. Like, for instance, Andy Rogers had sent out the thing that said, the Royals view Jonathan Bolin as a bullpen piece. And because of his additional options, he'll probably start in AAA and then work there. But he's a bullpen arm, right? Like, I think they've decided between, like, Bubich and Bolin and these other guys, who belongs where. And last year was still on figuring some of that out. Like, they weren't sure who the starters were and who the bullpen guys were. And, you know, like, they were hemming and hawing a little bit back and forth on some guys. And then they figured it out. As a result of that, some of these guys are going to just get to be bullpen arms from the very beginning, which will serve them a lot, I think, as we head into the season. Obviously, I'm excited. Royals baseball. Once again, today on our sister station, 1660, to get a chance to hear them as well. I think it's Seth Lugo.
His spring training debut here in 2025. Coming up in 20 minutes, we'll get right back to the Royals. We'll talk to one of the guys that everybody's talking about, Royals top prospect, Jack Caglione. We all know he hit the home run a couple days ago. I can promise you he will join us at 10:30 today right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5 The Fan. In the meantime, in Indianapolis, all the GMs and agents and some members of the media have gathered in Drew's hometown.
Which means rumors.
They have. They St. Elmo's are all having shrimp cocktails.
Where should
they
really be going, Drew? Where's the real true indie gym, you know?
Have you been to St. Elmo's?
I have actually never been to St. Elmo's before. Nope.
Because that's all I ever hear about. Whenever I hear the combine, I think, oh, well, the media is going to talk about shrimp cocktails from St. Elmo.
Drew was living there. He was like 21. There's no way we can take any food recommendations from.
That's his hometown, right?
Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but like.
I mean, born and raised.
But if I found a 16-year-old right now who lives in Kansas City, I'm not taking their recommendations on where to hit up in the city.
No.
They're 16 years old.
But like,
I think
when
my
I
parents
was seven,
have been to St. Elmo's, but I have never been to St. Elmo's.
But when I was like 16 or 17 in Kansas City, I still could have told you what are like the popular restaurants in town.
So you're just like, saying it, you're not actually offering.
Well, I mean,
so
like that's like acting like you didn't go to Jack Stack as a kid ever.
St. Elmo's is obvious.
Yeah. I didn't. If you, as a kid,
if you're in Indy and you haven't been to the Old Spaghetti Factory, you got to go.
Old Spaghetti Factory.
There, I think it was invented there. There's only a few of them left. There used to be a lot more of them, I think, across the country, but there's been less and less. It's a very cool like vintage spot. The spaghetti is very good.
All right,
like old school Italian place.
Yeah,
always good. Alex, big fan of that.
So Old Spaghetti Factory, there's a place also on just off of Monument Circle. If you like those quick pizza shop places, there's a place called Giorgio's. I used to go there all the time when I was doing my internship because
are we talking thin pizza? What are we talking?
What style?
Yes. It's okay. New York style pizza.
Oh, okay.
They've also got they have pepperoni breadsticks there. Bomb. I went there so much during the internship that I had in college that they knew my order as soon as I walked in.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this was your spot.
They're like, you want the pepperoni breadsticks and then the large Pepsi. Yes, sir.
Thank you. So they had your order down. So that's definitely
that place
the spot.
Is bomb.
Meanwhile, Brett Veach and Andy Reid will speak to the media today. Brett Veach will join us exclusively coming up around 12:15. Andy Reid's presser is expected to begin in 45 minutes. And they're going to be asked about Trey Smith. I know we're planning on asking Brett Veach about Trey Smith, especially with the latest report from Diana Rossini today. Maybe the likelihood of Trey Smith coming back is changing. Listen to this from Diana Rossini.
Tell me where Trey Smith's going to go. I probably would have picked it. I would have said New England, or I would have picked a team that I know needs an offensive line. But from what I can gather, Kansas City's making it a priority to try to keep him.
Really?
I think,
Not tagging him, try to get a long-term deal?
I think they're going to try to get a long-term deal done with him.
So she admits that's a shift, and that's based off of what she has heard from whether people inside the organization.
She's pretty well-sourced.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and she was on the Travis Kelce stuff a couple weeks ago or whatever it was, and she's well-respected. That's interesting because I'm thinking of the trickle-down effect. You know, like we know the dollar amount is kind of going to be the dollar amount for Trey Smith. He's going to become the highest paid guard in football, whether it's in Kansas City or somewhere else.
This is 20 plus million a year, 25 million, something like that.
Big time money. And I understand they can, structure it a certain way that doesn't have to all hit right this second. We all know how the game is played. But then what's the trickle down effect? Because if we all think they're also doing something with Joe Tooney, I'm not doing that with both, right? A non-premium position like guard, I'm going to extend Joe Tooney and Trey Smith. That means if they extend Trey Smith, doesn't that mean they're playing out the final year for Joe Tooney?
Does the boost of the cap change any of that? So I was thinking about this yesterday. Yeah, I understand. But that also just means, look, that means everybody can spend more money on Trey Smith, but it also means you can, you know? Like, maybe before, the money didn't make sense. Based on what you thought the cap was going to be, you couldn't really do it. Look, we can ask Brett Veach. He's going to be on the show at 12:15. Maybe the change in the cap moves the needle enough where you're like, you know what? For a year, we can squeeze them both. I'm kind of with you. I think if you move forward with Trey Smith, it has to tell you something. So here's the things that either tells you. Either Joe Tooney's gone. He's going to sign a one-year deal, or you're going to cut bait. Technically, you could save a ton of money by moving on from Joe Tooney. We talk about it with other players all the time. We don't want to bring it up with Joe Tooney because he's an elite-level player. So people are like, well, they wouldn't just cut that. Teams do that sometimes. And his cap number is in no way guaranteed this year. You'd save 14 or 15. I think it's quite a bit of cap space by doing it. So like either he's a short-term answer or he's gone, or you've given up on Kingsley, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's got to tell you something. If you're willing to bring back Trey Smith, what is your plan with Kingsley? What is your plan with Tooney? There aren't enough pieces or places for all these guys to pay. That, or you think Kingsley is going back to left tackle with a full off season and another year of development, you'll get him there. Yeah. Like, it's got to tell you something, in my opinion. I'm a little surprised because I think you and I agree. Trey Smith seems like the kind of player that if I'm a functional organization, I gave Drew's Bengals a hard time about this. If I'm a functional organization who knows how to draft and develop and move on from players, Trey's the kind of player that I go find cheaper.
The only argument is, hey, they once made Joe Tooney the highest paid left guard in football. That deal obviously ended up looking really good as time went on. So could they argue, okay, we're gonna phase out Joe Tooney. We're going to make Trey Smith the highest paid guard in football. And here in 2 years or so, it won't be as devastating maybe as it looks on paper. And then we'll go cheap at left guard. And that we'll have Kingsley will be our left guard instead of a right guard. And that's how they do it. They go cheap at left guard, expensive at right guard. They got another expensive year at right tackle with Juwan Taylor until they move on, most likely. And then still the gaping hole there at left tackle. That's the only way. I don't think we're seeing an extension for both. You know, I would love for Trey Smith to be back because I think he's a hell of a football player and all that. I just think at the price, man, at that price, at that position, I don't know if that's the best allocation of resources. But there's an argument to be made that do you want to have a brand new right guard in the year, a brand new left guard and a new left tackle, and like all these new pieces. Now they did
and
it.
You know, some of those are getting older or you're going to move on from like Jonathan, Juwan Taylor's not going to be on this team for 5 years.
After the Bucs Super Bowl, we all know they basically rebuilt the entire offensive line. So it would not be the first time that they replaced multiple pieces. And I see the text line. Someone says, hey, you pay all pros guys. You just pay them. No doubt you do. But typically, at the guard position, is that the one exception? Is linebacker and guard, two positions that are not as premium, Do you do that at those positions? Do you let somebody else, I don't even want to say overpay, but do you let them pay top of market? There's been very few guys this organization, and maybe Trey Smith falls in this category. We're gonna all find out this offseason together. But typically, Chris Jones, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, for the most part, have been the only guys they've paid top of market for. You know, Trent McDuffie's going to end up being that too here very soon, we think, whether it's this offseason or next offseason. There's only been a handful of guys they've done that at.
It's just different than the last time they fixed the offensive line, in my opinion, from Tampa Bay. Because when they fixed the Tampa Bay offensive line, the whole thing was a mess. Like, every single portion of it. By all accounts, everyone in the NFL still agrees that the Kansas City Chiefs is currently constructed have the single best or top five interior offensive line in football. They have a future Hall of Famer at left guard. They have what is deemed by most people the best center in football, and what is still a top 10 right guard in the sport. Maybe top five, depending on...
Yeah, I think top five, for sure.
Depending on the person you ask, right? I was starting, but like, so if you just bring back Trey Smith, well, then you're just down to fixing, like, let's be honest, the entirety of fixing left tackle is down to, or fixing the offensive line is down to one position. Can you fix right tackle? Because if left tackle. If left tackle is no longer a massive, glaring issue, well, then Juwan Taylor looks like a, you know, average right tackle, and your line's good. You can live your life. It's just crazy that one position in this, we know why it's an important position, made the offensive line look like the level of struggle that it had, all because nobody could hand each other off. Nobody knew what they were doing. And I saw some of that with Juwan Taylor. And yeah, you'll still have to fix right tackle a year from now or 2 years from now. Like, it's not long down the road. But, I mean, keeping the best interior offensive line, if I'm making an argument for it, I still think I'd move on from Trey.
Well, I don't think it's, like, the worst decision ever if they kept him. I don't know if I would do that, but I don't think it would be the worst thing ever to keep one of the best guards in football. I don't know how anybody can say it's, like, a bad decision. My only thing is the trickle-down effect of, you know, you pay Trey Smith that. Does that already tell us, Cody, that they're just going to try to go cheap at left tackle again? That's my concern. Are they going to say, we'll be good at right guard, we're going to pay Trey Smith his money, but does that mean we know we're not going to spend the money in free agency at left tackle, and we're going to go possibly the DJ Humphreys route again? Or until I'm told that it's impossible to happen from Nate Taylor or Brett Veach himself, I still don't know why they never gave Juwan Taylor a year ago in the offseason a shot at left tackle. But that's just my own thing that's going to drive me crazy forever.
Should we ask Brett Veach?
If we have time, we can. We only have him for like 10 minutes when he joins us later.
If we have like 2 hours, I'd be like, all right, Brett, we got a lot of things to get to.
Know what happened between the initial reporting of when they signed him that he's going to, left tackle, and then he never got a single rep ever. That's just one of those great mysteries for me, but... Anyway,
I mean, I get it, but it's an interesting situation. And if Diana Rossini is saying that they're making a concerted effort,
do you think that means anything about how they feel about Travis Kelce coming back or not, or what that cap hit could be if they're going to pay Trey Smith?
I know that I said it has to mean something. I just feel like it has to mean something as it relates to the offensive line. I think my most fascinating theory is, like, have we or should we rule out too quickly the idea that the Chiefs have not ruled out Kingsley as a left tackle? That we have all just moved way past that. We're like, not a chance, not interested, nice try. And they're telling themselves that with a year of development, the athleticism and the play still works, and he just needed a year to develop, and Kingsley is going to be a good left tackle in this league once we put him back there next year. My deep-seated fear is that they still think that's a thing.
It's hard to develop, though, when you're not playing. Like, you can only do so much in practice. That was the point. I forget who it was, but they said he's not getting... If the Chiefs were bad, he would have gotten game time and he would have played the entire season.
I know, but like, if you look at the left tackles, I went through that whole list really deep the other day, the one Nick Jacobs sent out, where half of the league starting left tackles were all drafted to pick 15 or higher. And then when you started looking at the guys who were taken in the third round, a lot of those guys sat their first year. Like 80% of them did what we're saying, Drew. They didn't play. They didn't play to get better. They were developmental pieces who did not start.
Right, but I think what Drew's alluding to there was, Jeff, we talked about the last week, I think I was on Thursday, Cody. Jeff Schwartz mentioned, and I agree, which is...
That's right.
If the Chiefs weren't going for a three-peat run, I do believe Kingsley Suamataia would have played more than two games. I really believe that. But they were going for a three-peat, and they didn't have time to let him develop.
But next year they're not, so maybe they're just going to let him start.
That's the big question, and it's going to get answered over the next month and a half between free agency and the draft and what they do or do not do. I don't like a whole lot of the free agent options at left tackle, because a lot of people in the text line are saying, keep Trey Smith and then go sign a left tackle. Who? And if your answer is Ronnie Stanley, that comes with quite a bit of risk, in my opinion.
Kid from the Rams, you know?
I don't want to sound like Jay Binkley for a second on the arm length stuff.
Oh, too short arms.
But he's got the same issue with that as Joe Tooney.
Damn, he's got arm length issues, huh? Too small.
That's what everybody says.
It's too bad, you know. Guy had hope.
Do you have short arms?
It's tough to have a length problem.
I've never measured.
You never measured your arms. Neither have I.
Any idea?
Drew, you ever measure your arms?
I'm gonna guess based on the fact that you're taller than me, your arms are longer, but I don't.
I mean, I measured wingspan, but not arm, not an individual arm. No.
We should measure our wingspan in the break. Let's find out.
We used to do a combine on this station.
Did they measure our wingspan for that?
No, I think we just did the events or whatever.
They didn't line you up and go through all your measurements.
We did. We did exactly two of them. Two combines. In the time I was here,
I think we should do another one.
At this point, it's the same people. So other than you and Mac now, like everybody else has already done it.
Oh, is Robin it too? Okay.
Dusty, I guess the only people that haven't done it would be Dusty, you,
it's quite a
and
bit
Mac.
Of new people,
so
actually, now that you think about it.
Problem is
that
we got
it's
some other
me,
people.
You, Carrington, and Bob that are the same.
Everybody's getting older. This is a problem, too.
Pull a hammy.
Everybody's getting a little bit older.
I won the first one I was in, and I lost I finished second in the second
standing
one.
Standing at 6'2" 1/8", you know, that's where you get into the.
They didn't even do that. They didn't even.
Oh. We just did the vertical, controversial
vertical. Bench press, controversial.
40-yard dash.
I'm sure that was rough.
The bench press, one year, somebody like cheated the whole thing.
Binkley. Who was Binkley? He was doing little mini reps. Yeah.
That's right. I can't make fun of that.
Come on, Bink.
Can't make fun of that. Mine was not a good showing.
I can't believe you make fun. You know, you had a... Rob's was the most embarrassing showing.
Yeah, I at least got a rep or two up. Rep and a half up. Yeah.
What were you guys benching? Like,
I don't remember.
The bar,
it was pretty much
it
the
was
bar.
Adjusted.
It was like 140 pounds or something.
It was weird. We didn't adjust for people's weight. So like everybody benched
the same amount.
Yeah, lifted the same amount, which I still pushed back. Was like, well, that didn't make sense. Why is Bink doing the same weight as I am? You know?
I don't know, man.
Why
people
are
said
you?
You've been working out. Maybe you'd be better. Better chance at the combine if they
bring it back.
I've
been working out, but I haven't been doing any strength training. I've just been doing cardio. That's it.
Stronger at heart, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's right.
We'll see.
All right. Up next, Jack Caglione, one of the top prospects or the top prospect in the Royals organization, is going to join us. We'll get his perspective not only on the big home run he hit the other day, but kind of what he's been working on and projecting out to the future a little bit. That's coming up here on Cody and Gold. Just getting started here on a Tuesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you on your home for KC Sports 96.5. The Fan. Reminder, here in about a half hour, we're expected to head to Indianapolis. Going to hear Andy Reid's combine press conference a little bit. And then in the noon hour today, we'll be joined exclusively by the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs, Brett Veach. We'll talk to him one-on-one right here on 96.5 The Fan. But yesterday we moved some stuff around a little bit, but we're excited now to head out to Arizona and be joined by the Royals' top prospect, Jack Caglione. Of course, he had that big home run the other day, and we appreciate it, man. 6'5", 250. I hope we didn't interrupt your lunch. I know you were in the cafeteria there a little bit.
Today we had like a little pasta bar, so a bunch of chicken Alfredo and a salad, so got to keep the greens in there.
Alex Gordon pretty famously like didn't have pizza for like 15 years in Kansas City. Is that how you operate diet-wise, or, you know, carbs are okay?
Carbs are great, in my opinion. That's how you get your energy, you know? I'm too big to go no carb, so I feel like I'd pass out without them.
I was going to say, do you almost struggle, I guess, to keep the weight up, or at least keep the body up at this point?
Honestly, it's not too bad, to be honest with you. They feed us really well over here, so... You know, we're never missing out on a meal.
What's it like to hit a home run like you did the other day? I know, like, in college, you seemingly did it all the time, but to do it against some big league competition in spring training, what's that just feel like?
I mean, it's a pretty surreal feeling. You know, my dad was out there in the stands, so I know he was pretty psyched up about it, and to be able to share that with him, you know, it's super special.
I know in college you get a metal bat, so is that what's the furthest you've ever hit a ball?
516.
516? Okay. Well, that seems just kind of ludicrous. And did it feel like it was further? Did it feel like all of 516? Does that make sense? Like, sometimes someone's like, I felt like I hit that further than the StatCat measured, you know?
Yeah, I think that one did. That was one of the ones where, like, I don't really stand on my homers too often, but I did on that one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to blame you on that at all. What's the last calendar year been like? I mean, have you had much time off? You go through a great year with Florida, and then you get drafted, you're playing in fall league, and then here you are in February. I don't know when you got down there to Arizona. So what's it been like?
It's been a whirlwind, to be honest with you, but it's been the most fun I've had playing this game. Just the people that I've met, the places I've got to see, has been phenomenal, you know, coming from that Omaha run with Florida and being around those guys. I mean, I consider all of them my brothers. And then, you know, having the opportunity to play for the Royals and represent them in the Fall League was another really cool kind of milestone in this professional career. And then getting the invite to big league spring training was awesome, and been out here for about 2 weeks now, and I'm loving every second of it.
Like, when you go through, so, like, we always envision on the outside that they go through these deep conversations and be like, here's our plan for you. Here's how long till you get to the big leagues. Here's we're going to start you in the minor league level. Any of those things. Is it like that? Do they go through, like, a long process of kind of explaining a timeline to you or how they want you to learn? Like, obviously to learn, right? But, like, do they explain it in those terms, or they just be like, eh, go play baseball, have fun, and then we'll talk about the rest of that later?
Yeah, I mean, you have meetings with whether it be the hitting guys or the defensive guys. They'll kind of tell you, I guess, like the areas that they think you need to work on. And I guess once you kind of check those boxes is when you'll move on. So I'm still pretty new to this, so I really couldn't give you the true answer. But sure. That's what I've picked up on so far.
We're talking to Jack Caglione here on 96.5 The Fan. We've also heard our guy Vern, of course, is out there watching spring training and watching you guys out there, that maybe you've kind of leaned on Vinny Pasquantino a bit. Is he one of the guys that has been out there showing you the ropes a little bit?
He has. Vinny's been, you know, nothing but great over there at first base. He's given me a lot of good tips and stuff that I'll carry into this season, wherever that may be. Yeah, it's just been really great to, you know, have the big league first baseman looking out for me the way that he does. So super thankful for him.
I guess this is the important stuff, right? People are always going to ask these questions. Ned kind of famously would just shorten people's names and add an S to them. And I know maybe you've had a chance to meet Ned Yost, the former manager. What's the preferred nickname? People are going to try a lot of different stuff, right? I've seen Jackhammer or Cags. There's lots of different versions. Is there a preferred nickname on your end?
I'm completely fine with Cags.
That seems simple? Like, just Cags seems like, or do you like your full name? Do you like to be called, you know, Caglione?
No, Cags is good. They started calling me that in college too, so it's been stuck for a while.
We on this show we've talked about sports memorabilia and sports cards and stuff. I saw the video from I guess it may be this past summer. So was that your dad and you were just ripping cards and he just happens to pull out one of your cards? Is that the story?
Yes. So my local card shop back in Tampa, Baseball Card Clubhouse, they always hit me up whenever, you know, a new product drops and stuff like that. And we usually just go rip it over there. And thankfully my dad had a break in between mediations and he was able to come out to the card shop and I gave him half the box. I had the other half and we just started ripping through them and we hadn't put any of my cards yet. And that was the first time that he'd seen one of mine. So I guess that he pulled himself. So It was pretty cool.
I was saying, the video is neat, and for listeners that don't know, like, a lot of people would love to pull a card of yours right now, I feel like. I saw one already went for like $80,000, man.
Yeah, I tried to get my hands on it, but it didn't really work out too well.
Well, I mean, did you just call the guy? How did you try to get it?
No, I went through the breaker who actually pulled it, and then he put me in contact with the guy who bought the Royal spot for that break and started messaging with him, and didn't really hear from him anymore. So, and then I see the card got sold. So I was like, all right, it's fine. I wasn't, you know, putting dead set on it or anything, but it would have been cool.
Do you try to, I mean, I know with the eventually one day, hopefully you'll have the chance for like the rookie debut patch. That's always a hot thing. And a lot of players are trying to get that back for themselves. Are you someone that either currently or in the future you like to, I guess, get your hands on your own and make sense your own rookie card and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm going to push way harder for my rookie card than I did for my super fractor.
You're gonna have to offer up that like Skeens deal, like see if the Royals will let him do softball at the field, whatever, right?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I opened up some questions to the text. I'm like, hey, you know, we're gonna have Jack Caglione on. What are some of the things you want to know about him? One of the questions I got asked was, what bat size do you use? They said, you know, you think about the bigger players in the league, Aaron Judge uses one of the larger bats in the league. What size bat do you swing?
I swing a 34-inch and 32 ounces.
Okay, so, like, that's not, like, quite as heavy as... I think Aaron Judge's reportedly was, like, 34 ounces. Is there a huge difference between that for you?
I hadn't really heard of anybody ever swinging a 34-ounce bat.
Maybe that was just the rumor, 33 or like with Aaron Judge. Is that about as heavy as anybody swings in the league?
Yeah, I haven't come across somebody who swings more than a 32 just yet.
Okay, maybe look, you know, maybe I'm wrong on, like, you know, it is. I'm internet speculating about whether the size. That way, at least it kind of makes sense. When you, like, that's always the question people ask. You come from Florida where you had a tremendous final junior year. You get into the Arizona Fall League. You're now seeing spring training pitching. What's the pitching difference? Is it less of a gap now because college is, you know, you can earn money there and everything else in between, or the pitchers are really good in the SEC? What's been the difference for you, I guess, in what you're facing?
Honestly, the biggest thing that I've kind of noticed is that these pitchers have a lot more in their arsenal. You know, in college, you'll face guys who are really good, but they have two, maybe three really good pitches. And in pro ball, it's, you know, especially in spring training, it's the whole point of it. It's for people to work on things. So guys are throwing the whole kitchen sink at you. So it's tougher to kind of sit one pitch because you have no idea what's going to come out of his hand. That'd probably be like the biggest difference between the two.
You obviously are well aware of where you were drafted. You're well aware of probably some of the fan sentiment already out there for you. How do you, I guess, stay measured? You want to be confident. You clearly are very confident, but how do you stay measured with just maybe the expectations that people have out there for you?
I don't really pay too much attention to it, to be honest with you. I just come in every day, put my head down, work hard, and, you know, just keep stacking days, and before I know it, I'll be exactly where I want to be, and it's all in God's hands, so I'm not putting any stress or anything on it.
How hard is learning right field? I'm sure you played similar positions a huge chunk in your life and probably played some other spots when you were younger. What's the learning curve been like out there?
I haven't done anything in right field.
Oh, I was thinking maybe they were, like, there was some talk that maybe they were going to work you in a corner. I thought maybe they were, maybe you've taken some work out there. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, not yet.
Okay.
But so, I played there in high school, so it wouldn't be that bad of a learning curve at all.
Okay. That, like, for the arm strength purposes, we didn't think you had any trouble there. And I guess you've been working alongside Vinny. What is he teaching you about first base or those spots too?
He's been really just kind of giving me tips on the way that he sets up to receive throws, just the way he kind of positions his feet. And then we talked a lot about feet to second. You know, he's a very low arm slot type of guy, and I've been working on dropping my arm slot a little bit more. So really just been talking about that, talking about receiving balls when they're hit hard, hit soft. The list goes on and on, to be honest with you, but he's kind of covering all aspects of it with me.
Well, Jack, we appreciate the time, man. We'll let you get back after it. Good to start to talk to you, and look forward to hopefully meeting you at some point down the road.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
You got it. Jack Caglione with us here on 96.5 The Fan, the Royals' top prospect, and plenty of fan excitement around what the future holds for Jack Caglione. Text line is enjoying the...
I was asking.
Text
line, know what
text
size.
Line's enjoying your comments about the the size of his baseball bat. Thank you for that.
Man, you know, gotta use a big bat. People are curious. I don't have to say. Text line, you always immediately go dirty, you know? Have some class. Me, I'd never make those jokes. I can't believe that you do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Not I think all I say is next, if we end up going on a road trip to AA or whatever, I got to bring some packs of cards, man. He is much like, I think there's at least three or four other guys minimum on the team that are big into to ripping baseball
rip
cards.
Packs?
That's why I asked him about it, because there's a pretty cool video as a reference from him and his dad open up some cards. And even in spring training, on one of the off days they had on Saturday or whatever, it was National Baseball Card Day, essentially a rip night. And he was at a card store out there. So he's really into it. So is MJ. So is Bobby Witt Jr. A lot of these baseball players are big time into the box breaks for sports cards and things like that. And so, he said he wished he would have got one of them. But
he said he tried to buy it, which was fascinating. I also, that bad on me for making the assumption. We have all been making the guess that if Caglione gets up to the big leagues this year, it was going to be in a corner outfield location due to the fact that that is the most logical potential opening, barring some sort of injury that would make first base or DH a possibility for him down the road. I assume they had already started some work in right field. Now, it is good to hear he played that position in high school, so it's not like it's completely foreign to him or that it would be unknown. But you and I both said that part of the reason we thought he needed some time in double and triple A is if they are going to try to teach him a new position, he was going to need some time in the minors in order to do it. Maybe not. Maybe they're still just planning on, because he's been working with Vinny so hard, maybe just going to keep working on him at the position that's most natural to him at first base.
Yeah, Vinny Pasquantino, whether you heard it from Jack there, I know Vern talked about it, has been really helping out Jack Caglione, it sounds like, already. And that's, you know, that's a credit to Vinny as well, because you think about it. I know you're potentially
kind of like
away.
He's coming for your job.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's why the right field part, if you're trying to figure out what's the way for him to help the team while still having the bats of Vinny and Salvi and Bobby and Indy and everybody all together at some point later this year or next year or something like that, it's got to be right field, because short of an injury, Vinny and Jack Caglione, we're talking about the same position here.
Yeah, and that's where you run
it. But Vinny's the guy that's really helping him. I think that's pretty cool.
Honestly, it'd be a lot easier to see if you just said, all right, Vinny and Caglione are going to share the job at first and DH. But because Salvador Perez and his current age gold, he needs some games at DH, and they like revolving DH like a lot of modern baseball clubs do now, where you can put Massey over there for a day or give Bobby the half day off or anything else in between. Kind of tough, you know, kind of tough if you've got Salvi and Vinny to see a roster where Salvi, Vinny, and Caglione are all on the roster, and one of those guys isn't in the outfield. And Caglione being the younger player and, like, viewed as, like, I don't know, that's not like a knock on Vinny, but I think viewed as the current better athlete, would put him out in right field. He's going to be listening to this and just goes, like, he's not, because he's in Arizona. I'm not trying to say you're a bad athlete. I'm just saying, I think currently, if they ranked him, they'd say Jack Caglione's a better one.
I'll make sure we get that isolated the next time.
I was going to say, it sounds like this is something we need to bring up the next
time.
We'll get that isolated. No, coming up in 15 minutes, we're going to head out to Indianapolis. We're expected to hear from Andy Reid as the combine and the meetings with the agents and everything are starting to get underway. And ultimately, the measurements and that kind of stuff are going to take place on Thursday. And judging by our conversation with Jack Caglione, Cody will be keeping an eye on some of the measurements throughout the week in Indianapolis as well for football players.
Another, that was only Chris Jones who ran into that problem.
Well, that's
hold on.
Jeez.
They did not measure anything at the combine that people ended up talking about the combine.
Yeah, so
I think we're talking about the arm lengths and the wingspan.
That's right, Drew.
And the height and the weight.
You tell them. That's Jeez. Exactly right.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's exactly right. My goodness.
Cody just said that you wouldn't make a comment that the text line did. And you just did. You just made a comment that the text line, hasn't already mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
That's accurate. We did play that cut from Chris Jones on New Heights.
We did. The NFL is also in the offseason competition committee reviewing some of the rules, and it looks like they're going to discuss something that was pretty evident early on with the new dynamic kickoffs beginning in September.
We kind of addressed it immediately.
Hey, you need to perfect this a little bit. We know that the returns were up. It worked. The rule did work. Trying to make the play more exciting. But if you really want it to work, you need to move the penalty for a touchback to the 35-yard line. And according to PFT, the NFL is going to consider a tweak to that kickoff, including the touchbacks moving to the 35-yard line. And this is exactly what we were asking for, because if your response to that is, well, that's crazy, why would you move the ball to the 35 for a touchback? Exactly. The point is to deter the touchback. So I think the 35-yard line is a stiffer penalty than having it be the 30-yard line. So I like this. I hope this is the tweak. You want to have less touchbacks, more returns, make the penalty to 35. The 40 might be too rich for some, but it needs to be bumped up from where it currently is at, because there's not much of a deterrent for the touchbacks.
Here's the thing. If you aren't going to change this, and I know that they still got like more returns than they had before, but it wasn't enough. If you're not going to change this to the 35, then get rid of kickoffs. Ban them. Just be done. Be out of the game. This, in my opinion, was your last chance to try to fix kickoffs. You don't want to do it the unsafe way. You don't want to push it back so they just do the old kick returns. You tried this way. You got some of the returns back in the game. The deterrent is not enough of a deterrent for people to consistently allow people to do kick returns. Make it a deterrent. And if you make it a deterrent and it brings back kickoffs in the way in which you wanted, great. And if not, well, then everybody starts at the 30 and we're done here. Like, we always knew, right? I thought we did. The agreement was that if they couldn't figure out a way to make kickoffs interesting in the NFL and, in their opinion, way safer than they were before, well, then it was done anyway. There wasn't like some other alternative to kickoffs. They were just going to get rid of them. So make it a deterrent. Make it to the 35. I wouldn't care if they made it the 40. Like, force them to do kick returns. Make teams do a play that is interesting. Because otherwise, it's all performative, you know? We're not doing anything that moves any needle. We're just like, oh, okay, you know, whatever. It's just,
it was better. I still am not, like, 100% sold on it, but based off of how bad it had gotten, it was better. The actual numbers behind it, the league said the change to the dynamic kickoff led to a 57% increase in returns, as well as a lower injury rate after 1 year of doing that. And that's with it being the 30-yard line. And that's why they're thinking, hey, we could bump this thing to 35 for touchbacks. Reminder, any change would require approval of 24 teams. And that would have to be ready for league meetings in March. So I think this is one that'll get adjusted. Like, out of all the other, like, the tush push will be way tougher to figure out what they're going to do. Some of the other stuff, this one feels like they're going to get the approval.
Well,
bump it up to the 35.
Can I also say that this is, like, the obvious thing? It makes it more likely people will score. The difference between starting the ball at the 30 and the 35, every time you move the ball 5 yards, pretty much up until the 50, it increases the likelihood of a touchdown by like 5%. So if somebody kicks it into the end zone, they have given the other team a 5% better chance at putting the ball in the end zone than they had a few minutes ago. And so I do think it will, at some point, deter these teams away from making those moves. Again, I thought we all kind of just generally agreed that that was probably the best case scenario for the rule anyway, is that it kind of works, and we might have to go another step further if teams still are kicking through the back of the end zone. Hell, you got the second half of the season, Chiefs are just putting the ball in the back of the end zone. They weren't trying real hard to keep the thing in play. They were just doing the thing they did before and play defense. And if that, again, then it's just performative. You're not actually doing anything.
Other than the punt return's different here, because we remember the Nico Remigio punt return. Kickoff return-wise, do you remember a single kickoff return in a Chiefs game? Not punt return, kickoff return.
No. Not of, like, I mean, I kind of remember, like, Remigio having a decent one once, but, like,
I think that was a punt return, though, wasn't it?
He had one decent kick return once.
He had one kick return where he almost housed it in the...
Yeah, and he got tripped up.
Was that was
a kick return, and it was like near like that. But
that's it, right,
dude? And I can't even like give you the good details. I'm just like kind of vaguely remembering maybe a kickoff return. So yeah, nothing of substance.
I maybe I'm off. I thought that was a punt return in the Texans game. Maybe I'm.
No, I think we're proving the point just by having this conversation.
That was opening kickoff. He almost housed it.
That's right. The Chiefs had a short field. They settled for a field goal.
A lot of ways, we're you know, making the point.
And even before, like, the rule change, obviously, or the consideration of it, Remigio, I think, took it out more than I and it might be because we watch more Chiefs games than anybody else.
Yeah.
But it seemed like he took him out a lot. He liked returning those kicks and just letting it go.
I see all the other people saying, like, get rid of the other rules. Like, DPI being a spot foul has to go. I actually like it being a spot foul.
You want it to be the automatic 15, then, is what the text line wants.
I think it's a spot foul in college. I think it's the opposite.
No, I hate the spot foul.
If you penalize someone 50 yards down the field, why the hell am I only getting 15 yards?
Because then you get into the just throw it and pray and hope that you draw. That's the pass play becomes hope for a DPI.
Here's the thing. If you do it the other way, I think we get the opposite effect.
Well, we already are seeing it. It's the current present day NFL.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, if you flip the rule to a 15-yard penalty, then the defensive player is doing the same thing you already hate. If I'm beat, I'll just tackle this fool.
Yeah.
It's only 15 yards. No risk for me.
Yeah, but
I'll just take out his damn legs and do whatever the hell I want.
Like, that's the extreme of it for sure. I mean, we've all watched college football.
But what you're describing is the extreme.
No, I don't think so, because I've seen the alternative in college football. You're acting like that we're just going to have guys tackling each other on purpose.
In
college, it happens once a weekend, maybe, like, if that. Like, we're acting like every time there's a 50-yard pass, the dude's just going to literally shove the dude and tackle him to the ground so he can't catch it. That's a bit of, like, I think that is the extreme. I've seen it in college. If it was what you're saying, then how come the college teams don't do that all the time?
I think you'd see a lot more in college, because I don't know.
But every deep pass isn't, you're making it seem like 90% of every deep throw leads to a defensive pass interference down the field, and it's probably like 5% of deep throws.
We're talking about the
penalty,
and I'm
gonna guess
right
that 5% of DPIs down the field is a guy just mugging him because he's beat. I don't know. I mean, I don't have like hard statistics
in college. If a guy gets cooked, then if a guy gets cooked, then you just grab his jersey and just yank him to the ground, and you know it's a DPI, and you just take your 15.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of 60-yard penalties personally, so I'm good on that.
Yeah, change. I mean, I understand people's always issue with it. I just feel like if that's where you're committing the penalty, that's where you're committing.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Be a little more cautious 60 yards down the field. I get it. The underthrown deep ball thing is something people just don't like in the NFL.
It's kind of like
an open invitation.
It's like the smaller scale, it's like the tush push. It's sort of like, is it an aesthetically pleasing play? Does it make a lot of sense? And I think the answer is no on that. But take advantage of the rule that exists. I don't think that's one that's going to get changed, by the way. I don't think so either, like the DPI part of it. The tush push will be the one to watch, and then this kickoff. I don't know what other big rule emphasis we're going to see. Remember the last offseason, we all thought it was going to be this hip drop tackle thing? That was like a non-factor all year.
They just find people quietly rather than flag them for it in the game. So they try to hurt their pockets enough to convince them not to do it.
But did that even happen that much?
If like you're in the game and I can still win the game by like ripping someone down, well then you got to do what you got to do. I don't know. I don't know how many hip drop penalties there were, but I mean, I remember seeing a couple but I don't know.
Yeah, I like this one. I don't think they'll ever do it. I love this suggestion. The offsetting penalties when one's a 15 yarder, the other one's like a 5 yarder. It's ridiculous how they offset. I agree with you. I don't think they'll change it, but it is annoying. Someone with a personal foul 15 yards and like the other one's false start. No, bad example.
Illegal,
but you know what I mean?
Formation.
Like, yeah, 5 yard penalty. You're like, wait, how do those offset? But that's the way the rule works.
It does seem weird. It feels like a personal foul should negate the offsetting part. If you commit a personal foul, we're not doing offsetting anymore. If you late hit the quarterback. Like your guy being 2 yards illegal man downfield. We're wiping that one away. You can't just be crushing people.
All right, coming up next, we're expected to head out to Indianapolis. Going to hear from Andy Reid right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. I'm sure he'll be asked about some of the roster decisions moving forward. But also, just first time I think we've heard Andy Reid speak after the loss in Super Bowl, other than post game, right? He didn't have an end of season wrap up, so maybe some more. I know it feels like that was ages ago, but I'm guessing he'll be asked a little bit more about that performance as well. Coming up next.